It's the New Books and Literary Studies podcast. I'm your host, Philip Woodavine, and today I'm joined by Marcela Sulek, doctor of English literature and author of three collections of poetry. But today we're going to be talking about something else she's done recently. This past November, with co-author Jacqueline Kolosov, Marcela published Family Resemblance, and I think it's best described by its own subtitle, an anthology and exploration of eight hybrid literary genres. I'm very pleased it's brought Marcela Sulek to the podcast. Marcela, thanks for being on.
Thanks for having me.
So, great to have you on, again, of course. And, I just want to start by quoting you from the beginning of the book to get a better idea of what a hybrid literary genre might be. So, you write, when we speak of a hybrid literary genre, we're speaking of individual works that do not replicate any previously existing pattern of literary affiliation. Rather, they take features from multiple parents, multiple genres, and mix them to create a new entity. So I want to start by asking how you came to that idea. At what point did you decide to write this book and about that topic?
Okay. Well, there are two answers to that question. One of them is more technical and the other one is more philosophical. But the technical question was that I found myself teaching at Bar-Ilan University a course in multi-genre works. And I was more drawn personally to genres that had more than one meaning-making mode involved in them. For example, Jenny Bowley's essays or Eula Biss, other works like that. I have a lot of students and graduate students in the class who practice multiple genres, choreographers, painters, midwives. And so I was interested in doing something that sort of broke open traditional genres. And the other part was really the philosophical part. So many of my graduate students, and where I find myself also, are places in which we don't occupy one particular identity, but multiple identities. And writing toward that necessitated breaking open genre and gender boundaries and creating something new. So Jacqueline, I believe, also was interested in this kind of breaking open of pre-existing genres. She herself writes a lot of lyrical essays and works with flash genres. And so we sort of started talking about our favorite books to read, and we realized that there wasn't really an anthology that had the kind of work that we were interested in presenting ourselves. We found, obviously, Rose Metal Press has a fabulous catalog of flash fiction and short form nonfiction, and many magazines and journals right now are also interested in these kind of works that burst boundaries. But we couldn't really find an anthology that extended past the prescribed genre against which it was breaking. So we decided to put together this thing, and it's been really fun.
That's great. So that's an interesting, like, a dual approach to this book. I guess it sounds like you were approaching this project as a reader, somebody who's reading work in multiple genres, and as a teacher trying to invite your students to explore different ways of literary expression. I guess I'm curious, is this something that you see in your own writing, or is this mostly something that you're seeing in other people's work?
Well, I also have found that I've gravitated more toward lyrical essay in recent years. I had been writing poetry. I tried for years to learn how to write prose poetry, and it really happened for me, I guess, when I moved abroad. I'm living in Tel Aviv now. And there's something about being dislocated, I think, that that makes you question all the rules of, I mean, on all kinds of levels, philosophically, ethically, morally, and in a writerly fashion as well. Some of the experiences that I had couldn't be contained in a particular genre. And so I found myself writing a lot of lyrical essays, braided work, and suddenly I could start writing prose poetry. So, yeah, I myself have been practicing this kind of hybridity as well.
Okay. So that's interesting. I was suspecting that. I just wanted to make sure, and I was curious as to what forms you had been working with. And just out of curiosity, where did you move to Tel Aviv from? Where are you?
I have been living in Washington, D.C., but I grew up on a rice farm in Texas. And when you grow up in a small town in a place like Texas, the whole world, everything that you're reading about in literature is completely different from your lived experience anyway. Mm. So there always was this sort of feeling of being an outsider. And, you know, recently, this is sort of off topic, but I noticed that I came from a Czech-speaking farming village in Texas. We didn't call them villages, though. And I noticed that recently somebody's written a book about this kind of thing. And it also is it's also a multi-genre kind of work. It's a surrealist sort of narrative. So
interesting. Yeah. Interesting. So that, I mean, that is, does seem like the kind of experience that might be best depicted in a hybrid work. Actually, I remember Mary Carr saying something about that whole living in Texas and then all her lived experience being so different from the New Yorkers that she was reading and the Shakespeare that she was reading. So,
oh, absolutely.
That's super interesting. I guess more to your technical motivation for writing this book, have you gotten much use out of this anthology? I mean, it seems like it's a tool you designed, but have you been able to make use of it yourself in your writing? And are you finding it helping your students?
Absolutely. It just came out in November, and this spring I'm starting to teach the hybrid multi-genre course once more. Our semester just started this past week, and I'm using this textbook now. So we're about to start reading it on Monday, tomorrow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're the director, is it right that you're the director of the creative writing program at Bar-Ilan? Or?
Yes, I am. Uh-huh.
So as a director and not just a teacher, are you, I mean, what kind of challenges come up when you're trying to talk about genre? Because it seems like, and with you guys too, it's that divide of poetry versus prose, and those are the only two things you can do. That seems to be pretty well entrenched in creative writing programs, not just at the MFA level, but, you know, just at any level. So,
absolutely. And this was one of the issues that brought me to this book as well. We had been trying to design a graduate program that would accommodate the needs of our students and also accommodate our abilities of our faculty. And for a while, before we introduced the creative nonfiction track, which we now have going, we thought about doing just prose and poetry, but that wasn't my idea. And I sort of bristled at it because it seems to me that poetry and nonfiction are much more alike in certain ways than nonfiction and fiction. And I jokingly said, well, why don't we just call it truth and lies or fiction and nonfiction? but the point is, these technical outside structural factors do absolutely have to do with what we're able to put in our containers. But sometimes you just kind of wonder what's driving what. Shouldn't the content be what drives the form rather than the form being what drives the content? So,
yeah, and actually there's a great line in the book about that where you say genres have, at least since the age of print, been characterized according to whether the lines of words on a page consistently continue to the right margin or whether they consistently stop somewhere before the right margin, and that's how you would distinguish between poetry and prose. Mm-hmm. And so I've said this before, but I didn't realize how arbitrary it was until I saw how exactly it was arbitrated. So I guess my question is, I mean, that's such an interesting little historical tidbit. I wonder, like, are there other places in the history of genre that those delineations were made? When you were looking back into genre and how we have come to divide the way we write today, did you see anything like that?
Well,
looking back?
We did, and I might pause this a little bit. I meant to pull this up earlier and I forgot. The last time I taught this hybrid course, I taught actually novellas in verse. And in the 17th and 18th century, people were really experimenting with verse a lot. There was a novella written in Anapest. There was another one written in a dactyl. And it was fascinating because if you read it prosodically, the tale was a completely different narrative than if you read it just looking at content. I guess what I'm getting at in a roundabout way to answer your question is that I haven't really seen such a focus on genre distinctions in the past as I do see it now. Plato and Aristotle were pretty firm about their beliefs about what genres did and what they were for. But I don't really know if we focused so much on genre distinctions until recent times. I know that, you know, in poetry, we had a lot of discussion about meters and prosody and different ways to count out feet, poetic feet in English especially. Right. But as far as genre distinction, that didn't really seem to matter whether it was prose or poetry or a bunch of letters, you know, how the novel started as epistolary.
Right,
right. So, yeah. So, I mean, in the 18th century is completely, completely hybrid, even the content with all the monsters. And so I guess.
Right.
Yeah. So I kind of felt like this book is kind of going back to our roots is in terms of what writers do. I don't know if the rise in, I didn't really research this. I don't know if the rise in MFA programs or if the publishing industry has sort of concretized our genre distinctions that we use today. I don't really know why they seem to be so firmly in place now, but this seems to be a relatively new phenomena.
Right. Yeah. And there's a great line in the book that sort of gets right to that idea of hybridity being, I guess, naturally undivided or hybridity being the original sort of source. You write novels, novellas, scientific catalogs, literary criticism, philosophy, history, news, myths, magic spells, religious incantations were historically carried from place to place in verse form. And you can just imagine that that might be an easier way to remember it. But to that point, just to push a little further on that, I wonder, do you think, and based on what you said before about wondering whether or not it's the form driving the content or the content driving the form, do you think of genre being something more defined by the technology that is being used to produce, or is it the demands of a market? Are we defining genre by what people are used to spending money on, or what is it more? Is there really more of a, I guess, a real creative reason behind the genres as we have them today?
Well, I haven't really done that much in research into the history of book marketing and book sales and things like that. But I would imagine one thing that I have noticed, and this is reflected in our book as well, that a lot of the emphasis on multiculturalism and redefining basic categories of who we are as human beings, it seems to me that this is reflected a lot in our literary genres today. And I haven't really noticed such a large revolution, perhaps, in the definition of the individual since maybe the Enlightenment period. I hope I'm not exaggerating. But now we're calling into question not only gender roles, but gender itself. And not only national identity, but identities within a national umbrella. That transcend language affiliation and religion. And we're seeing much more emphasis on hyphenated identities. And so I'm wondering if this is correlating in any particular way with this explosion in hybrid genres that we see today. I'm certainly
glad
that the work that we have in this anthology are exploring these kind of questions. Aside from identity politics, you know, they're also exploring issues that individuals feel hopeless against, such as Julie Carr's 100 Notes on Violence, which talks about gun violence. Or we'd had wanted to include Claudia Rankine, but she wasn't available at the time. But I mean, her Don't Let Me Be Lonely about mental illness and also Citizen. So, there's a lot going on. And partially this is because of the rise of social media in which individuals have more of a platform on alternative ways of publication besides, you know, the major presses.
Right, right. I guess if we look, and there's actually a quote you have on this. You write that Jacqueline and I sense that, at least to a certain degree, we would need to approach an anthology, an exploration of hybridity from the point of view of hybridity as the original source of literature. And there's, there's that biblical parallel that you point out from Genesis 5:2, male and female, he created them and blessed them and called their name Adam. So the first creature is genderless. And I think, if I'm not wrong, the Hebrew Adam is just a creature. Right. So we're talking about maybe literary creation as something that is intrinsically genreless or genderless to begin with. And we certainly, it seems like there's a whole history of that. My question is, I guess, is there anything new? Are there new forms of literary expression that sort of post-date this prose poetry divide that we're all familiar with? Is there anything that we can kind of point to in the most maybe recent years that we can call sort of a genre of our era, I guess? Is there any new, when you were cataloging these genres, did you find anything?
We didn't put this in the book, but I certainly, when I think about it, you can see Facebook profile updates, our status updates, tweeting. There's a whole book. Fadi Juda has a book, of collection of what he's calling poetry that was created on cell phones, on a cell phone. Mm. So we do have this kind of thing as well that, And who is it? Joe Smith, who has the 6-word memoir right now. So,
right.
Yeah. So I think that of course modern technology and social media has made possible, especially the teeny tiny kinds of writing. Of course, fragmentation has always been with us. And we've had we've got Kierkegaard and other philosophers who've written in fragments as well. And this is something that Maggie Nelson was doing even before the rise of social media. So maybe that's just reinforced it.
Sure. Okay. So I kind of want to, it sounds like genre is the product of something else. There's a greater process kind of going on. There's actually this great, you guys mentioned Daniel Dennett, who's talking about the nature of consciousness, how self-narration is a function of consciousness and how it sort of defines the pronoun I or sense of self or identity you were talking about earlier. So I kind of want to push into that kind of territory, get into more of, I guess, the philosophical end of it. You've talked about genre as a container, and that's a recurring idea that comes up in the book too. I guess I'm kind of curious about what is contained within that container, what's that content that form is arising from? So
yeah.
I guess that's a question about literary creativity.
Did you ask the question or are you still going to?
I'm still setting myself up for the actual question. So I guess thinking of hybridity as the original source of literature, do you feel that in writing this book, have you begun to approach the nature of that kind of that process? Have you learned more about your own process? That process that leads to whatever you end up making, the product of that process. Do you feel that your book is getting towards that idea a little bit, or what do you think about that?
The process of going back to the original.
Just literary creativity is something that is inherently genreless. It doesn't have a genre. And the process through which we get these different genres. Are we learning more about that process by understanding what comes out of it?
Oh, I hope so. I feel that is something that I think that that's something that we were aiming for in this book. And this is why we have essays by the writers. Not just their anthologized reproduced work, but we also have their process essays, and some of the writers talk about why they were compelled to write in this particular form. Many of them felt that there wasn't a pre-existing form that could contain their own experience. And if I may, I'm going to go back just a little bit to the opening of your question when you were talking about what can the container contain, what's different about what the container contains in this genreless form. I'm not quite sure we're calling it genreless because everything has a structure, but
right.
One thing that I did notice, and that I've talked about this with other colleagues as well, like Keith Leonard, who teaches African American Lit at American University, and I have been talking a lot about the concept of the I. And what I think that this work is doing is showing how fragmented this concept of the I is, the concept of a person is. Sarah Vapp's essay on motherhood and language acquisition in her piece Oscar's Cars just really shows the disintegration of the maternal I when you have a child. And Craig Santos-Peros shows the disintegration of a communal I and consequently a personal I as well when an entire society or culture is erased in Guam in his pieces. And so I really think that that part of what we're getting at and part of what we're exploring is how we constitute what we call people, personhood, humanity. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I was kind of surprised and excited about in this anthology. A lot of people, no matter what angle they're using to get at it, do talk about what constitutes the speaking I. And that's kind of exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a thread that we could pull on for a long time and reach some very interesting conclusions. I guess I kind of want to bring myself back down because I want to just to bring us back to the book. So the book isn't just an anthology, it's an exploration. So you're collecting works in order to better understand mm-hmm. how they work, to maybe taxonomize genre to a greater degree. I guess I'm curious about the collection just as an anthology, though. And just wondering about if you brought like a creative sensibility to the works that you were collecting, if there's like some editorial principles that were you thinking, I want to include this because of this, or were you thinking more that you wanted to better illustrate? Was it more about explaining the genres, or was it more about was there something else that you were bringing to the collection?
Right. It was sort of a dual approach. First of all, I think we outlined for ourselves the basic genre interpenetrations that we wanted to work with. And at the same time, we made a list of writers that we felt had to be included because their work was incredibly good. And it was also doing something very timely and very interesting. And frankly, these were works that we responded to, Jacqueline and I, as readers, but also works that my students responded to. And they felt in certain senses, either fascinating, funny, salvific, it depends. So we did begin this way, and then we began to refine our map. And this isn't exhaustive. Although we do talk about 8 different genres, we kind of hoped that it would be a starting point. If we could have gone on forever, we would have included novellas and verse and other forms that we didn't have room for here. But we wanted to start, we wanted to find a place that would give us a platform to begin this conversation about what happens when you take genres that are traditionally read in one meaning-making lens, prose or poetry.
Right, right.
And so we also wanted, though, to have our authors talk about why they wrote this particular piece, what they saw as their guiding principles. And some of them even wrote about how other writers can replicate what they did, and not really replicate, but they gave us hints or points for writers who wanted to try this sort of experimentation themselves.
Sure. So I guess in a certain way, it's functioning as a pedagogical tool, sort of you know, if you're curious about what kind of things you can create, here's a set of different ways you can do it.
That's right. But it was more than that. I know what your question is. And it was more than
right.
that as well. So we also wanted this to have some use for people that really just had an interest in aesthetics and an interest in genre and an interest in this kind of work. So hopefully it fulfills multiple functions.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess you talk about how you and Jacqueline sort of were beginning to collect this, the anthology together from what you were responding to. I guess I'm kind of curious how your collaboration with Jacqueline worked. I noticed that you alternated intro essays. So one of you would introduce one genre and then the next would introduce the next. Mm-hmm. How did you work together on that?
Well, we really just played on our strengths. Jacqueline writes more fiction, and that I don't write fiction at all. So Jacqueline does write fiction, and I work more with essay, poetic memoir, and poetry sorts of things. And also I was interested in the visuals, the pictures made of words. And Jacqueline had much more experience with short form fiction, nonfiction, and so that's how we divided it up.
All right. And so I guess within the strengths you were playing to, pictures with words, the more poetic entries, I guess. Do you find yourself having any favorites? Is there anything that stands out among the anthology that you would return to? Is there anything that that stood out?
Well, I love all the work we've collected, but there are pieces that I felt particularly moved by. And this one, actually, the epistolary section, we had to arm wrestle over because we both really loved everything in it. But I found myself incredibly moved by Harriad's postcards to Donald Evans.
Yeah, those were great.
Yeah, and that's really what started me off. And then I asked for recommendations among friends too. So some of these pieces were new to us as we incorporated them into the anthology. And Amy Newman's Letters to the Dear Editor is a find that I'm really ecstatic about. And then I don't know, Edgar Carrot is a colleague here in Israel, and I just love his What Animal Are You? It's so
That was fantastic. Remember.
Yeah.
Reread that.
Yeah. And of course I also like the lyric essay section a lot. Kathleen Sidfin and Jenny Boley and Sarah Vapp are favorites. So
yeah, those definitely stood out to me as well. I made note of Mary Scheibes, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name correctly. Edgar was great. So yeah, there's definitely some real, I mean, this is not only instructional, I would say to anybody who's looking at this book from the outside, it's certainly instructional, but it's also entertaining and touching and all of that as well. So that is really everything that I had to ask you about. This has been super interesting. I mean, having read the book, and now seeing the other side of it, and how it was created and all that. So thanks again for being on. Appreciate
your time. Thanks for having us.